real good consensus on how to define precisely what's considered preventing Hatzalah and what's considered nunu. Okay. Sorry, I just need to take care of this. I apologize. Oh. What's considered a hatzalah, like preventing a hatzalah, like just preventing saving this guy, and what's considered a gramar tzicha. So most poskim assume that turning off a ventilator is a gramar tzicha. Rabbi Bleich thinks it's not. He thinks it's, interestingly, Rabbi Bleich thinks no, it's just preventing, you're just not continuing to save him. Ironically, he thinks that you always have to save him. So even though he doesn't think turning it off is gramar tzicha, he has a mutter to turn it off, you didn't violate any isser, but then you have to turn it back on. Lashitase, so. He's saying they're two separate. It's two separate inyanim. Turning it off is not a gramar tzicha because turning it off is just not giving him more. I have to give him oxygen at every moment? Yes. Yeah, so did I give him oxygen right now? No. Did I cause. I was lax in my mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. I didn't save his life, which I have a chiv to do, but that's not ritzicha. Right. It may not be Yahar Galiafer. Okay, fine. So we talked about Rosh Hashanah Orbach, we talked about Rizal Nechemya we saw. Then we talked yet last time also about lowering the ventilator to 21%. So we noted that Dr. Steinberg quotes the name of Rosh Hashanah, but Dr. Avram disputes that point. I tried to argue that it doesn't flow from Rosh Hashanah's own Ha'ara. If you have to give medicine, then you seemingly would have to give more than 21% oxygen. If you're mechuyev to give medicine, so then you're mechuyev to give all medicine, and 30, 40, 50, 60, 80% oxygen is just a different form of medicine. The fact that it does not in a pill or a liquid form doesn't matter. If you think you only have to give that which those natural needs in an unnatural way, so you'd have to give 21% oxygen in an unnatural way, meaning in the ventilator you only have to give 21% oxygen, that would be fine. But if Rosh Hashanah goes well beyond that, you have to give medicine. Once you have to give medicine, then you also have to give all forms of medicine. So I didn't really understand that, and Dr. Abraham thought that it was not correct. So comfortable with that. Okay. So I want to move on to the Israeli law. So this, the rest of this packet, it's still the same fat packet, is just from that same issue of Asya. There are related issues. They're not all related to our issue, but I figured once I was photocopying, I'd photocopy the whole thing for you. So if you look towards the end, this is the... they want to pass a law in Israel about dealing with dying patients. And so this was the Hatzaat Chok, this was the bill, I guess they would call it in Israel. Then we have the real chok, and then it was called Va'adat Steinberg. It was Dr. Steinberg chaired the commission for it. And he wrote an article on the halachic basis for the chok, which we saw earlier. I think we saw earlier. Well, it's here. Right, that's where he says the 21% by the... he says it in two places. Okay, sorry. We saw it here. Okay, that's why we saw it here. There's how to deal with an ICU patient. He says you can lower it to 21% here, and we pointed out that that's not necessarily universally agreed upon, both in Rav Shlomo Zalman. That's where I argued that it doesn't make sense according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, and that's how we got into the difference between gramar tzicha and not saving someone. So the next couple of pieces is there's just a letter here from Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Eliashev, Rav Shmuel Vosner, and Rav Nissim Karelitz that you have to give everything. It's like this typed letter. You can see it. They actually photocopied it. I'll just read it quickly. He says, you're not allowed to do anything to kill him. Fine. And you're not allowed to be monea mimatan mazon, food, or anything else. And you have to give trufos tipulim refuim hashigratiim kefi hatzarach. You have to give everything that is standard. And they have a list on the bottom that you have to give. You have to give him food. Ali gamal de zunda opium keva. You have to give it either through an IV or through a feeding tube or through a G-tube, meaning straight into his stomach. Kogan yeslotati runozlin lavrid, IV fluids, rigot insulin, morphine, antibiotics, and blood. Okay. Standard things that you have to give because those are considered standard and or fulfilling natural functions. They're just repeating the same idea. Then the next point is, this isn't really our issue, but that's why I quoted it. This is, can you give morphine to a dying patient because there is a chance that it might kill him, it might shorten his life a little bit because it does... depress the respiratory center. So Rabbi Cohen's going to talk about that when we're done with this topic, but it's just here. And then treating an ALS patient, which we'll talk about as nafkamina. ALS is Lou Gehrig's disease. And so there's a piece from Dr. Abraham, there's a piece from Lau. And then, oh, so here's Dr. Steinberg. Okay, so that was just in the Asia, in the next couple of pages. I figured I'd just photocopy it all. Okay, so here is Dr. Steinberg's article, the Basis HaHilchati LaHatzaat Chok HaChole Anot HaLamut. So he's going to try to justify there's a law to make it halachic. And so I think I photocopied the whole thing for you, even though much of it is not relevant for us. But if you look on page 265 of this Sefer Asiya Tes, if you look at page 265 here, I actually have another one if you want to just use it for...
Thank you.
Oh. So he says on page 265, so you have to realize this is going to be the law in the state of Israel. So they have to take into consideration both halacha and the fact that not everyone follows halacha. Right, so there are going to be very few chiyuvim, and there are going to be very, very strong recommendations as opposed to a chiyuv. I don't know that that necessarily means you're not obligated to do it. It means maybe halachically obligated to do it, but the Israeli law is not going to force you to like wear tzitzis or something. No. But fine. So here on the bottom of the page, he says, be'ofen ekroni. So in principle, at least, yesh chov alhamshech l'chol tipulam amalim tzrachim ativim shel achole, anything that fulfills natural functions can go in ochol, stiyo v'chamson, food, water, and oxygen. Or things that any other patient would have received, otherwise known as routine. Kigon antibiotic, al delicate rayot, for pneumonia, meaning there are a lot of patients who are dying for some other reason and they keep getting pneumonia. So do you keep treating the pneumonia or not? Because if you don't treat the pneumonia, there's a chance they'll die from the pneumonia. So you have an advanced stage dementia patient who's just lying there, who seems to be alive according to every definition of the book. They're lying, they're not really able to move, they're not really able to eat so well, but they can eat. They don't seem to be in pain at all, and they keep getting pneumonia, let's say. So do you have to keep treating the pneumonia? Or otherwise, they're not dying, right? They don't have any terminal illness. But they're getting a pneumonia every so often because they have some lung something. So we can just treat the pneumonia with antibiotics. So many ethicists would say in this country, just don't treat the pneumonia, let them go faster. So here you're saying, no, go on antibiotic, you have to give. Odam. And then there's a line here. Davar zeh. So now this is the habasis hilchati. Davar zeh chayvim la'asod gam neged ritzono shel achole. Even if he's not returned to the next page, even if the patient disagrees, you have to force him to accept these therapies. Okay? And he's quoting that this is from Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe. We'll talk about Rav Moshe after today. There might be, at the end of today, there might be differences between Rav Moshe and Shlomo Zalman. But if you look, he says, Mi'idach, there's no, Ein chiv l'tabel b'emsem shem yodim l'machalai sadit. You don't have to treat the underlying disease if there is no chance that it will work. And if they will certainly increase the pain and suffering. That whole paragraph he's saying is from Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe. It's a combination of various opinions. It's a very complex paragraph, which we've been through pretty much each and every line, so you can go through it separately. Fine. So if you look on the next page, so then he continues. Then he quotes that letter from all those Rabbanim. In the text here on 267, he says you can't shut off a ventilator. The 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph on the page, you can't have a ventilator, because that would be killing the patient. But then he says again, you can lower it to 20%, which we discussed. Fine. So that's where he talks about. So if you keep going, this is actually the bill that was passed into law. If you look on page 313 on the top, so this is now how you write law, the bills and laws in Israel. It's like all these, maybe this is how you do it in this country also, I have no idea. But it's less of a narrative and more of a bulleted points. So if you look at Simon Gimel, is chole hanote lamus asher eino rotzeh shechayav yuarchu. He does not want to have his life extended for whatever reason, right? This is a democratic country. So if you look in 15 bays, right? There's just the second paragraph there. So this is, I guess, a little bit fishy. Ala metaplim b'chole hanote lamus, the people taking care of him, kamur b'siv katan aleph, lasos ma'amat savir. You should make a ma'amatz, is an effort, savir is a reasonable effort, kedei l'shachne'o, to convince him, l'kabel chamtzan, v'chein mazon v'nozlim, to accept food and liquids, af emtzayim l'chutim, even artificial means, v'chein l'kabel tipulim shigratim, l'chutim l'tipul machot, boz maniot, machot, reka v'tipul makel. Right? All those things we said, that you're al pi halacha, you have to do, those people taking care of the patient must make a reasonable effort to convince the patient of. Okay, I guess this is a compromise between what the halacha requires and living in a democratic society. Not commenting on whether it should or shouldn't be. I'm just pointing out here it says ma'amat savir, and therefore it said, and in the basis hilchati, it said afilu neged ritzono, which here it's not going to be anything against your will because you can refuse therapy. Okay, so if you look, Then in Siman Dalet, you can't do. He says you can't do anything. He says you can't do anything. Right in number 19, can't do anything that will kill him. You can't give him any medication that will kill him. All right. And then if you look, if you turn the page on to 21, okay, 20 is physician assisted suicide is illegal. Okay, and 21 on page 314, he says now it gets. This is really the juxta the gist of the law here. You may not stop any continuous therapy. If stopping that continuous therapy will bring his death. Whether he is Baal Kashrut, has decision making capacity or does not have decision making capacity. Not continue with therapy. You can b'shev al taisa not give more fluids, not give more liquid, not give another dialysis. Shenifsak, but this is a continuous therapy, right? So how do a continuous therapy that never stops? Shenifsak shelo b'mechuvan, if it's stopped by accident, o shelo b'nigud l'horat kol din, or someone stopped it illegally. U'chein mutar li'manam mechidush tipul rufi machzori, v'akol kafuf l'horat b'siman gimel. Well, and you can also stop a recurrent therapy, meaning there's certain therapy that's not continuous, but it's every 3 days, let's say. Every other day, you can not initiate the next therapy, right? So he's saying you can't turn off the ventilator, but if it should go off, you don't have to restart it. Or if the oxygen tank, back in the time when there were oxygen tanks and the ventilators, you would not have to replace it. You would not have to do another dialysis, etc. Also, now here, what does alulala havila moto mean? Stopping this is going to kill him. So Dr. Steinberg wanted to argue in the previous, in his Basisa Ilkhati part, that if lowering the oxygen tank to 20% will not kill him, will not cause the person's death immediately, then it will be okay. What is immediate, how immediate does that have to be, is unclear. It's not spelled out in this law to the best of my knowledge, but this piece makes sense given everything we learned already. So fine. So that's the whole law. That's the law. So Dr. Halperin, he's the head of the Schlossinger Institute, came up with an idea. And this was, I think, this was worded into the law for this purpose. Says, well, what if we didn't, as we talked about this briefly, what if you had a ventilator on a timer so it no longer constitutes a continuous therapy, right? You can't stop the ventilator because the assumption is, well, it's a continuous therapy, you can't stop it. But if it was an oxygen tank, I wouldn't have to restart it. I wouldn't have to put in a new oxygen tank. So what's the difference? So I thought, well, Moshe Valtaisim, what was going to pass? So that's what he's saying. So what if you put a ventilator on the timer?
Like from the beginning.
From the beginning, you put a ventilator on a timer, it's going to go, and why? Because the patient came into the emergency room. I don't want to have to decide right now, is he suffering? I don't want to have to decide right now. I have no idea if he's going to get better, right? I don't know if he's suffering. I don't know if there's a chance of him getting better. I want to try something, and like times of the essence, he's crashing in front of me. So we'll put him on the ventilator. But then I may not be able to take him off. So he says, so fine, put him on the ventilator with a timer for like 2 weeks, like a 2-week timer, right? And after 2 weeks, we'll have time, we'll assess, we'll be able to make a decision. And should we want to continue the therapy, continue the ventilator, we'll restart the timer. And if we don't, we'll let it go. And they made this timer with all sorts of, it's not a Shabbos clock, clearly. They put in a lot of effort and work into safety features and backup systems, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was very tested. And even the people who were monitoring this were very, very concerned about the safety and the concerns. And I'm not mitigating that. I'm just saying that they're very responsible people and took care of all of that. So we're not going to talk about that. We're assuming that it's working kadas v'kadin, and it was taken care of both by the medical community and the halacha community. I don't mean to mitigate it in any way, but these concerns were just dealt with because the people working with it are professionals and responsible, and they took care of it. Fine. So he says, okay, so does this work or not? So Rav Shlomo Zalman, though, said if you have a patient who's not suffering, you have to give him oxygen, right? You can't stop it at all. The law says that if it doesn't matter if he's suffering or not, if as long as a person wants therapy stopped, right, and it's non-continuous therapy, he can stop it, right? If it's discontinuous therapy, you don't have to initiate, you don't have to make it, you don't have to start it over again, right? That's what the law said. The law didn't limit it to the case of someone who's suffering. Rav Shlomo Zalman did, though, so this is a halachic piece. So he's going to have to say, well, only someone who's suffering. So this timer business is not going to work for someone who Rav Shlomo Zalman would have said, well, if the timer goes off, you have to restart it. So then what's the point of the timer? So if you look on page 328, they're going to limit this into the following. They're coming up with there's a committee here that's going to deal with this. And so if you look at the bottom here, Huskamu arba'a kronot haba'im al das kol chavrei ha'vada. Okay? they're going to isur muchlat al hamata activate. You're not allowed to kill anybody actively. Heterli manamit pitul rufuim akev mavis. You don't have to do. You're allowed to withhold therapy that is just preventing death, whatever that means. On the following three conditions: aleph acholin otelamus, he's dying. Beis achola sovel maod, he's suffering greatly. And gimel, he doesn't want to. He wants the therapy to stop. Right? We're not doing this over and above someone's will. This has to be a choice. Okay. And then three, not continuing the therapy could be defined as, right, is not, yocholet mugdar ki himanut mitipul, will be b'shev ha'paisa, okay, and we'll take care of all of these other things, and we're not going to turn anything off, and we're going to be very careful, and they're going to have people watching this patient, and et cetera. So they're going to take an ALS patient. An ALS patient, like I said, Lou Gehrig's disease. This person has a neuromuscular disease where they start losing function of various muscle groups, that the neuromuscular junction stops working. And so this starts peripherally, meaning at the hands and feet, and works more centrally, and meaning comes down the arms, up the legs. Eventually, so they lose the ability to move. Eventually, the diaphragm stops working. It's a voluntary muscle, right? The diaphragm under the lungs, which allows you to breathe. So the brain is sending signals to the diaphragm to contract and to breathe, and the person just can't do it. So this person usually gets put on the ventilator because they can't breathe on their own. The brain is not a muscle, and the brain remains completely functional. The person is completely conscious, usually the whole time, completely aware of what's going on. They can't speak because that's also a voluntary muscle, and it's not working. The eyelids and the eyes can move, usually, because it's controlled by a different set of system. So you have patients like this who can communicate with, like, Morse code or whatever if they're taught how to do this. Via blinking. Now, not only do they lose function, but they get a very heightened sensitivity to pain in all those areas that lost function. So drawing blood from these patients is extremely painful, and doing anything to them is extremely painful, because they can feel pain even though they can't move. So it's a very sad case. So even Rav Shlomo Zalman said, in that case, you don't have to put the patient on the ventilator because he's suffering, right? And adding and putting this patient on the ventilator is just going to increase his suffering. So he said, okay. So let's use these type of patients who are Shlomo Zalman said, Mimela, you don't have to put on the ventilator, and we'll put them on the timer. Right? Because Mimela, I don't have to do anything. If I didn't have to do anything, Mitchila, the timer can't be any worse than not doing anything. That was the argument. Okay, so they're going to use these patients, and they're going to have a lot of people involved, and they're going to take care of, I'm not going through all the medical parts, they're going to take care of all the blood pressure, and they're going to have palliative care, and they're going to take care of these patients well.
You're saying you don't have to put them on anything because it hurts, or you're saying you shouldn't?
You don't have to. You can choose. If someone thinks you can choose to be on it, on the ventilator.
Even though it's causing more pain.
You can choose to have pain. You can say, well, I want to be mimaric, my avonus. Or he chose. I mean, this is unfortunately a slow process, so usually they have time to think about these things ahead of time. But often their eyes do it. There's something also called a locked-in syndrome. Locked-in syndrome is not a neuromuscular disease, but also you can't move. You can't function. Sometimes the people can't breathe on their own. And they also can develop these Morse codes. So the editor of Elle magazine, Jean, I'm going to say Cloud, but it's not, Bobby, Baubby, he was the editor of Elle magazine. He was in the locked-in syndrome for a while, and he developed a Morse code with his eyes. And he wrote a book called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly while he was in locked-in syndrome. It was translated to a bunch of languages. And it's pretty intense about his experience of being locked in.
He wrote it while he was locked
yeah.
in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he didn't write it. Whatever he wanted to call it. But he did it with his eye. And then one eye had to be closed because one eye had to be sewn shut, I think, because it had irrigation problems, was getting infected. So then he had one eye. And it took a long time to write that book.
How long is the book?
I mean, it's 100 pages. It's not like a...
That's still
a lot. Yeah. I mean, even writing a page was like having to, like... At one point, he only had one eye going, so, like, you couldn't more... Whatever. Not simple. Not simple at all. Yeah. Anyway, fine. So these people are conscious, though. Like, this is different. ALS is different. We're assuming that we assume that the locked-in patient is not suffering physical pain. But we assume that the ALS patient is suffering terribly. So we're going to talk about this this person, and we are going to use this ALS patient to test his theory. Okay, fine.
What's he testing?
This timer business. They just want to make sure it works.
They just want to test the machine.
Not only test the machine, test the system. They have to make sure it's going to work within the hospital system. I don't see what the big... Okay, but whatever. It's an experimental therapy officially, and it has to get IRB approval, and it has to be it's a clinical trial.
Not just a change of plug.
Well, that's what it is, but it's a clinical trial. Okay, you want to mess with life support machinery, you need to have a protocol in place. I'm more comfortable, you know, I mean, yes, they're just putting something in the plug, but okay, whatever, you know, better this way than the other way.
Right.
Fine, so if you look on page 331, he's very clear. We're only going to do this with ALS patients. They all agree. And, okay, fine. All right, fine. So he gives you the whole Hakdama. Then he says, well, I'm going to ask the Poiskim. So he asked Rav Neuwirth and Rav Yoshua Neuwirth and Rav Victor Neventhal. Okay? And so if you look on page 332, this is the Shaila. And you have to read the Shaila because Rav Neventhal answers in a very cryptic language. He goes, if the answer to one is yes, and the answer to two is no, and if the answer to two is no, and the answer to three is yes, I mean, it's a very, you just have to, like, read the question, because he kind of doesn't repeat, often, like, the Sicily answer, like, repeats the whole question and the answer. He tends not to. So, fine, so we're talking about this patient with ALS. And if you look in Bayes, right, on page 332, Bayes, Laura the Roshama Zaman said, you're, like I quoted before, you do not have to connect him to a ventilator. You can if he chooses. He's quoting Rabbi Efrati, B'Shem Rav Eliyashiv also, that it would be mutter, Nikon. The stipler, okay, fine. So look at Dalit. Ha'achat. First question. Ha'im niktuk mimachshira anshaman nechshav ka'asar asmoneya kariga b'yadayim. Straight out, our question that we dealt with last time, is turning off a ventilator considered gram ritzicha, or is it considered asar asmoneya? Just turning off a ventilator straight. Ha'shnia. Is it mutter to connect these patients to a ventilator with a timer? Right? Meaning they will never have been connected to a ventilator at all. The only time they will be connected to a ventilator will be one with a timer. Because Dr. Halper wants to differentiate between having a patient on the ventilator and then plugging him into a timer, as opposed to someone who only goes on the ventilator that's on the timer. Fine. Okay. So if you look in Hay, he says, now he's going to give you, before he gives you his own opinion before he asks the Shaila. So he says, is it the Hasar Samunei or Rigar B'Yadayim? Our question. So this is his attempt to answer it. Okay? He says, well, if it was mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, or it was an ambu bag, meaning, right, sometimes you see them, like, they're pushing the bag to, like, blow air and oxygen into the person's mouth. And if you stop, you can tell me that's Gram Ritzicha. It's not Gram Ritzicha. That's Pasha that I just didn't do the next thing. So he wants to say, well, that should be similar here. It's, I just didn't continue the therapy. It's just automatic. And he therefore quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Chaim David Halevi, and others, which is not exactly true. I take issue with some of his footnotes here, because we saw Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that no, turning off a ventilator is not okay. He only permits. So fine. That's a good analogy, right? I think the analogy is valid. The question, does anyone say it? So Rav Chaim David Halevi certainly says it. So if you look in the last...
When could you stop with the bag?
Well, let's say I did. Forget when I could. Let's say I did. Is that Gram Ritzicha, or I just didn't push the bag again?
Well, what would just not pushing it be called? Do we have something for that?
Yeah, I was... If I have to, then I didn't do Mitzvah Sbekoch Nefesh.
Right.
Okay.
It's not Gram Ritzicha.
Gram Ritzicha might be Harig Val Yavar, and not doing a Mitzvah Saseh is not going to be Harig Val Yavar. So if you look at the last line on page 334, he's quoting from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Chaim David Halevi, and others, in three different footnotes. Rav Chaim David Halevi definitely does say this. He says it very clearly. Rav Shlomo Zalman, he quotes, and Acherim, and if you look at the Acherim, it's the Tzitz Eliezer. So we went through the Tzitz Eliezer. Rav Tzitz Eliezer does not say this. Right? This is Tzitz Eliezer about the timers on the ventilator, which we saw extensively in the Chelek Yud Gimel Pei Tes, where he says you don't have to restart the ventilator, and he says you can shut it off. Because the patient has no heartbeat, no brain function, and isn't breathing. The only time that Tzitz Eliezer allows you to shut off the ventilator is when the guy is dead. For all intents and purposes, he just appears to be alive. And, right, remember we went through that in Yigimel and Chelek Yudal, we followed up with that. So the quote from the Tzitz Eliezer in this context, I think, is misleading. Because the Tzitz Eliezer did not allow you to turn off the ventilator on any patient who had a heartbeat. So I think it's misleading. But, okay. And what about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, we said, For the ALS patient, you don't have to put him on the ventilator because it will just increase his suffering. But Rosh Shlomo Zalman said you can't turn off a ventilator. So what's he quoting? He's quoting Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach by a completely different case. Regarding the issue of brain death, so Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has the following opinion. He believes that there are two ways that a person can die. A person can die when their heart, when they have irreversible cessation of vital function, of all vital function, meaning their hearts and lungs stop working irreversibly, then you're dead. Or as Dick Teresi in his book calls plain vanilla death. Right? Just like plain vanilla death. Alternatively, you could be dead when your whole brain is gone. Whether it's because it's been cut off, or whether it's completely turned to mush. Okay? So at one point, there was a belief that a brain dead patient's brain completely turned to mush. So Rosh Shlomo was very clear that every single cell of the brain has to be dead. Now, I don't know how you judge cell death in halacha. How do you measure cell death in halacha? There are different measures of cell death in biology. But let's assume we agreed on some measure. Every single cell of the brain has to be dead. I also don't know how you define what the brain is in halacha. There are certain nerves that come off of the brain themselves. Are those part of the retina part of the brain? Is the eye part of that? Let's say we had some criteria, very clear criteria, what the brain was and what the cells of the brain were and how we're going to determine cell death. So he was told that in brain death, it's almost clear that all the cells of the brain are dead. However, he was a little bit not, that's what the belief was. So he was still uncomfortable with believing it. He said, well, if that would be true, the person would be dead. He was uncomfortable, though, saying, and therefore cut open his, you can cut, while he's, his heart's still beating, take out his organs. He said, therefore, what you have to do is turn off the ventilator. Wait for his heart to stop beating. Wait a couple of wait 15 or 30 seconds. He says 30 seconds, although when he asked the doctors, they told him 15 seconds. Whatever. And then he can assume the whole brain is dead. And once the whole brain is dead, you can then take out his organs. They say, but he allowed you to turn, but he wasn't sure the person was dead. And he allowed you to turn off the ventilator. So that was his, that's Dr. Halpern's right, that sometimes you can turn off a ventilator. So the problem is that there Rosh Shlomo Zalman was pretty clear that the person, he thought the person was dead. He was just uncomfortable about it because how do you know that every cell in the brain is dead? He's relying on some medical test. He's relying on some scientific test, right? I mean, how else, I mean, the person's lying there with their head attached. You can't really see it. You're not scanning this person. You're not doing anything. He's just believing that this is the state, and therefore he was uncomfortable with it. But he really thought, he said, Karov Levadai, he writes, that the person's dead. So in a case where it's Karov Levadai, that the person's dead, he allowed you to turn off the ventilator. It later turned out that that's not true, that not every cell of the brain is dead. Certainly not every cell of the brain is dead. The vast majority of the cells of the brain are not dead in brain death. Neuropathology studies confirm that. And not only that, Rosh Shlomo Zalman was made aware of it, that parts of the brain are still, not only are they not dead, are functioning. The hypothalamus could still be functioning, maintaining temperature control. And therefore, he says, I'm chozer from everything I said, when he found that the hypothalamus still works. So what does that mean, I'm chozer from everything I said? So I thought shot was, well, if he's still alive, then you can't turn off the ventilator. And Dr. Abraham agreed with me that, well, if the patient's still alive, it's Rosh Shlomo Zalman l'shitasei. Forget you can't meaning even if his heart you can't initiate the whole thing. Turning off the ventilator is usher for Rosh Shlomo Zalman. So I think this quotation from Rosh Shlomo Zalman is a little bit misleading because there he's clearly talking about a patient that he says is karov levadai. Well, he thought it were meaning this lifnei chazara. He was chozer on that same page in this Rosh Shlomo. He tells me when I think the hypothalamus, when I think parts of the brain are alive, then he's clearly alive, and therefore you can't do anything. But originally he thought he's karov levadai, that the person's dead, then it's mutter. Short of that, we have no heter from Shlomo Zalman ever to turn off a ventilator.
So when you say misleading, is that a nice way of saying wrong?
I said misleading because he quotes it, and I disagree with him. But, I mean, Shlomo Zalman's not here, so I can't ask him. That's why I think it's misleading. I don't know if that was clear. Okay. No. Look.
He's misquoting, he's taking it out of context.
Rosh Shlomo Zalman definitely said in that case you can turn off a ventilator. In other contexts he said you can't. What about this context, the ALS patient? Lo shamanu. So it's going to be a judgment call. Is the ALS patient more similar to the brain dead patient? Or he's, who I'm telling you, that you can see inside, Rosh Shlomo Zalman describes as karov levadai that he's mace, or like every other patient where he didn't allow it. I'm arguing that he was more similar to every other patient that he did allow it. Dr. Halpern might be saying, but you see, at least in theory, he was willing to concede the point that it's really a sarasamanea, he just didn't like it. I see what he's trying to say, I just don't think, I think Rosh Shlomo Zalman there at that point was just being mitzaref sfeikis. It's almost certainly he's dead. And some posts give, oh, that's a sarasamanea. I happen not to. But he's so almost vada he's dead, so then, okay, fine. That's how I read it. Now I'm biasing the discussion because, you know, Dr. Halpern's not here. So that's how I read it. So I don't think it's a fair citation. That's all I'm saying. And Acherim, and given that the Acherim he's quoting is the Sicily Ezer, I think that's even... The Sicily Ezer, I believe, is wrong. The Sicily Ezer is wrong. It's not just misleading. He allowed you to turn off the ventilator because he thought the patient was dead. Right? Otherwise, he does not allow you to turn off the ventilator, and he, in fact, requires you to turn it back on. And he says, I don't really care what else is going on. So quoting the Sicily Ezer is wrong, I believe. At the end of 8, he's also quoting Rav Pinchas Baruch Toledano, who indeed does say you can turn it off. Rav Toledano says you can't turn it off. Rav Toledano and Chaim David Halevi, Rav Pinchas Baruch Toledano of London. He was the Av Bezdin of the Sephardic Bezdin, Av Bezdin of the Sephardic Bezdin in London back in the day. Oh, he might be still. I don't know. The article I have is from a very long time ago.
Like 60 years or like 20 years?
I thought like 60. Could be. Maybe I'm wrong.
Dian Toledano is still
head of... Right, I think there's. I think for years there was a Dian Toledano. Like a whole family was involved. I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay, could be the same guy. F sure. The Mishnah Alachos, where he doesn't say that, but see there, where he talks about it. Okay. So I think, given that he's quoting the Sitzel Ezer, and I think the Sitzel Ezer is just blatantly an incorrect citation, so I'm leaning to say that the Shlomo Zalman also, I'm disagreeing with it. Fine. He goes, but Shlomo Zalman says that Rav Moshe says it's Usher, it's Gar Mitzicha, and I also heard that Retzer Rav Eliashiv says, so what do you say? He's asking Rav Neufried and Rav Levinson. Okay, and what about the timer? Because Rav Moshe says that you do not have to, right? Rav Moshe is clear that when the oxygen tank empties, you don't have to put in a new one. Right? That he says straight out. So is this similar or not? So fine. At the end, if you look on page 335, the questions, can you do this or not? So he has four questions. So the four questions are, Can you put such a patient on a ventilator with a timer? Two. He's allowed to refuse being connected to a ventilator. He's agreeing to go on only when it's on a ventilator, on a timer. No, sorry, take it back. He's saying, first of all, can you attach this patient to a ventilator on a timer? Secondly, what if the ALS patient says, well, I'm willing to go on the ventilator, but only for a week. But then I want you to turn it off. Is that mutter? Otherwise, no ventilator at all, and I'll die before the week. I'll live an extra week, but you have to turn it off, or I'm going to die tomorrow. Three. Matan ora l'tzevet ha'refuilu utzit atzinur migronos shel ha'chole miyad yimasakat ha'pulash al-mukhanal al-dei ha'timer ha'im puter t'abaya. So, we have a problem. So, let's say this is mutter. Or let's say we did it. It's mutter. Like I said, right? So the ventilator goes off after the week, or a week, 2 weeks, I don't remember what the protocol in the end was, but it's a significant amount of time. It's not like a couple hours. It's time to think about it. So the ventilator goes off, and now, okay, fine. So now the man has a tube down his throat, right? Because he was going to the ventilator. Is he a ghostase? I think he's a ghostase at this point. Right? I can't define ghostase, but he's at least a esophagosis. So he's now, the ventilator's off, he might still be breathing a little bit on his own, right, depending on how sick he is. Might not be breathing at all on his own. May still be conscious. His heart is still beating. He's alive, l'kaladeus. Right? So I can also disconnect the ventilator, meaning I can, the tube down his throat and another tube are connected, I can disconnect it and move the ventilator away. What about the tube in his throat now? Can I remove the tube from his throat? So why would you ever want to do this, right? So you might say, well, it's moving a ghost case. Why would you want to do this, right? You have to have a good reason. Otherwise, it'll be awesome. So he says, well, so, a stickle physics. So the tube is narrower than the diameter of your trachea, right? That's how it fits down your throat, yeah? Makes sense? Otherwise, it wouldn't fit. Now, how does a ventilator work? The ventilator pumps air into your lungs. So why, when it pumps air into your lungs, doesn't it just come out? If the tube is narrower than the diameter of your trachea, right? So when I pump air in, I should have a leak, right? So what I have is a cuff. It has an inflatable cuff around part of the tube, has like a blood pressure cuff around it, and you can inflate it with air to create a closed system. So when you put air in, it stays down, it stays in and doesn't come out, okay? What I've done now is I've narrowed the effective breathing diameter. Let's say the trachea was a 5-centimeter diameter originally. Now the tube is only 2 centimeters, and I have the thickness of the tube and the cuff around it. I've narrowed his effective trachea to 2 centimeters from 5 centimeters, right? And now he's not in the ventilator anymore, right? Because it turned off. So now, must I take it out Because now, even if he can take a breath on his own, this is going to kill him.
Will it?
Well, he'll meaning. So what does he have to do? In order to breathe through a smaller effective trachea, I have to create a larger gradient of pressure between my pleural cavity and the atmosphere around me, which is going to take more effort on my part, right? In order to do that, because I have right if it's narrower, in order to pull the air, to pull the same amount, the necessary amount of oxygen in, I'm going to need more pressure to create more pressure, and I have ALS, so I can't really do that. And so what do you do? So do you have to take it off or not? Okay, so now we've created this extra additional problem. Fine. And then four, Haimish Chovala, note Chibur Lechonat Hashemal Zman Katzuv Matan Oral Tzivet Harfilo Tzivet Tzimri Gronos Acholim Yadam Sekat Pula. Should you dafka say, oh, when we put him on the timer, it will only be Al Tnai that when the timer goes off and we don't restart it, that they will actually take out the tube. Meaning, should we take out the tube and should we make this the policy?
So can we take out the tube and then should we have to take out the tube?
Should we make it as part of the policy? I'm not really sure what the difference between 3 and 4 is, but... Right, he's talking about them. Meaning, it would be that it turns out that his ability to breathe before he was on the ventilator was greater than the ability to breathe after he's off the, when he's off the ventilator, right? The ventilator harmed him if we leave the tube in. So you might say, well... I think what he's trying to do is preempt the following question. He's saying, well, yeah, it's all fine and good. The problem is that when you turn off the ventilator, so now he's a geisus, right? And you're not allowed to take the tube out because he's a geisus. But if you leave the tube in, you've made him in a worse situation post-ventilator than he was pre-ventilator. Before the ventilator, he was better off. The ventilator harmed him. So you shouldn't put it on at all. I think that's what he's trying to preempt. I think that's what 3 and 4 are trying to preempt. Right? Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense? He just wants to say, well, don't oscillate it because the tube will stay in because we'll make it tonight that the tube will come out. Now, if you think taking the tube out is going to be a problem of moving a ghost, so let's see what they answer. But I think that's what 3 and 4 are there for. Because and they, I think he realized what's happening. So Rav Neuvert, if you can read the handwriting, Shkoyach to you, he wrote, so originally this was printed in the Asya Journal, and then they reprinted it in Sefer Asya. Sefer Asya comes out once every year or so and collects a bunch of the articles and adds to it. So here they actually just transcribed it because it was almost impossible to read. In script, though, to make it look still like it's handwritten. So, B'derech Higiani Michtavol V'Ratzoti La'anot Miyad. Wonderful. Kafi Bakashat Ma'alat Kvod Harasos Shalat Chacham Chachihuva. So, yeah, I love Poskim. The Yom Tov, Mutter Lahosif Shemen La Menorah. Right? If you have a candle burning, you're allowed to add oil to the menorah. Right? To make it burn for longer. Gamim Yadua Shekavur Azman Yina Nerechbe. Say, wait a minute. There's enough oil in the candle. It's Lol Yontif, and there's only enough oil to last till half the meal. So I want to add more oil to my candle so it'll last the whole meal, another hour and a half. So I'm only putting oil to last. I'm not putting an infinite amount of oil, only enough oil to last another hour and a half. But after an hour and a half, it's going to go off. Right, the candle's going to extinguish. So is adding the oil to the menorah adding fuel? Or no, it's not adding fuel. It's I'm not only am I adding fuel, I've already decided that it's going to go off in an hour and a half. I put out the candle. By adding only an hour and a half of oil, I put out the candle after an hour and a half. So it's awesome. Does that make sense?
No, sorry.
If you add like an hour's worth of oil to the candle... So I've added an hour of oil to the candle. Wonderful. That's mutter on Yontif, right? He's saying, but by adding an hour of oil to the candle, you've also decided that it's going to go off in an hour, right?
But only if it was empty.
Fine. Okay. And the chanami. So whatever the total amount of oil, whatever I added, it will go off after the amount of time that I added on Yontif. Right. So is the action of adding the oil on Yontif an action of continuing the current lighting? Or is it considered to be an action of making the candle go out after a certain time? On Yontif, I did a pu'ula.
It changed when it would go out.
Yeah, I did something that will turn off, meaning the fact that I did it before Yontif, so that's fine. He's saying, on Yontif, you're doing something that's going to put out that candle.
So it's kind of like, it'd be the same as if you removed some oil.
Right, so he's, but he's saying putting oil is mutter, removing it is also. That's his point. You can also, right, if you have a timer, this is Rav Shlomo Zalman, this is Rav Neuvert, who wrote the Shmir Shabbos, right? The Shmir Shabbos is the popularizer, that's not a real word, of the Shita that if you have a Shabbos clock on the light and it's going to go off in an hour, you can extend it to go off in 2 hours, right? You can move the clock right? If the clock thing, if it's 10 o'clock and it's going to go off at 11, you can twist the dial to make it think that now it's 9. Right? So if instead of going off at 11, it'll go off at 12. Right? It's mutter to do. Did I do nothing? But I now did a pu'ula on Shabbos that's going to turn that light off at 12 o'clock. So that's mutter, he says, right? So al pizeh. Kol shemosif avir miplila asot pu'ulat afsaka. Anytime you add air without doing anything that's stopping it, tavolav bracha. Right? You're adding air. You're giving air to this patient. Tavolav bracha. Ulichora gam ein sarach lahatno loti et asinorot minapeh. He says, so it should be fine, and you don't have to make it tonight that they'll take out the that it'll only be when they take out the tubes. Leave the tubes out of it. I'm not really sure why that is, but he's saying it's the same thing. You're just adding oxygen to this guy's life, right? Right now, the ALS patient has no oxygen. I'm only giving him a week's worth of oxygen, right? So is giving him a week's worth of oxygen adding to his life? Or is giving him a week's worth of oxygen saying, well, after a week, I'm going to kill him? So he's saying, no, it's just like adding to the shemen to the nair on Yontif, which it does do both effects. We're not fooling ourselves. It does add to the fuel. It also, though, extinguishes the flame after an hour. He's saying, who in here? You're adding to the fact that it has to do with a timer, and the timer works. So sometimes this is just conceptually like muddled because... Well, the timer means that it's on and I'm setting it to go off as opposed to the oil, which I'm just adding to, right? He's saying, I think what Renovar is saying is no different than putting in a week's oxygen tank. Although, it's a little bit different. There is enough oxygen here to continue. I just put in something contrived to stop it. But he's saying that doesn't matter. That's the same thing. Now, why do you... Right? Does that make sense? He's saying it's just similar to giving him an oxygen tank for 2 weeks. That's all I have. It's a 2-week oxygen tank. It says, Kabbalah Bracha. And then a chinami. It will go off. So will the candle by adding oil on Yontif and its mutter. I don't understand why you... What about the tubes in the throat? I don't understand that point at all. But let's leave that aside for a moment. So Rav Nevensal, on the next page... This is confusing. So Hatshuvatem Lekaman. L'sheila tu, Hatshuvahi ken. So what is Sheila tu? Sheila tu...
What if patient says he will only...
Right, and you can shut it off. He'll only agree to go on to the ventilator if you'll turn it off after a week. That's mutter. Right? Because otherwise he would have said no. So Ashayla Shuva he can. Lilot Lut had Efsharut and he's carried by Shayla 3. Meaning, it's not it has nothing to do with the answer to question 3. Do you have to leave? What about the tube? Meaning, patient is saying, I'll go on the ventilator for a week and then I want you to shut it off. Right? Well, now about it, the tubes in the throat. He goes, well, that it's mutter to do, regardless of what we answer to question 3. Klomar. Gami machuva l'sheila 3, hilo. Even if we say, you shouldn't take out the tube. Ki yishar lismoch ala tzevet. Oim ha'otzosh ala tubus mizikar ufuit mitzadim acherim. Or removing it is, he's saying it has nothing to do with the tubes. You're allowed to do this regardless of what we decide about the tube staying in the throat or not. L'sheila 3. So he understood Sheila 3 as saying, well, if we do this, can we rely on the doctors that they'll take out the tube after when he dies?
Meaning, is the tube based on what kind of patient?
This is the ALS patient. This is all the ALS patient. This is a patient who does not have to go on it, right? He found 2 Talmidim of Shlomo Zalman to ask. Rav Noivir and Rav Nevensal brought Talmidim of Shlomo Zalman. So they're going to hold like Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman said he doesn't have to go on the patient. He doesn't have to go on it. They're not going to disagree. Right? If you would have asked other posts, they may have gotten a different answer. But he asked 2 Talmidim of Shlomo Zalman, which is fair. So he's saying, well, what about the... He said, he's understanding that question 3 is saying, look, the rabbis came in, everyone, we attached the timer, and after 2 weeks, when the timer goes off, they're not going to restart it, but we're not going to be there. So most doctors would just leave the tube in and say, Shalom Yisrael, whatever. So he won't breathe, and what's the difference? So the concern here is can we rely on them to remove it? He says, yes, you can rely on them to remove it. Hatshuvah, he can. L'sheila 4... He can. If the answer to question 3 was yes, as a tshuvah l'sheila 4, he can. Then the answer to question 4 is also yes. Right? As gam a tshuvah l'sheila 1 tia ken. If the answer to question 3 is yes, and the answer to question 4 is yes, and the answer to question 1 is yes. Okay? Question 3 was, can we rely on the on the medical team to remove the tube? He said yes. If you can rely on them to remove the tube, then they have to remove the tube because it's preventing his breathing. And if they have to remove the tube, and if we can rely on them to remove the tube, then you can put the patient on the ventilator. I'm assuming Dr. Halperin spoke to him first, because that's the only reason I can imagine that he asked all these questions. Meaning, you're allowed to put him on the ventilator with the timer, because when it goes off, they will remove the tubes. You're not going to create a situation that was worse off when he's done than when he started. Okay? Fine. So they pretty much seem to think that this is fine. Sofdavar, this is Dr. Halperin writing again. Shalaik rich shalti, loital etzami karunchal kitzuv meirosh l'zman ha'pulata anshama. He said, my original question was not about actually putting him on the ventilator. On the ventilator with a timer. Etzami karun alav iskimu gam ha'goonim, and al karuva poskim shuz karun rechtav la'shayla. Right? Ha'shayla ita kitzad li'gabar al bayat technit kasha. He said, really, the question was really about the tubes. That's what the focus was. That's what they answered. And he said, oh, but after we finished, we came up with a, he says, they came up with a matzalu pitaron techni na'ot labaya techni tanal matan tmichat lachatz apoteret tabaya miyateret ashelai karit. Well, right, if instead of turning off the ventilator, you would have only provided 21% oxygen. So when you shut off the ventilator, what's left? There's 21% oxygen in the air, and there's the patient's own ability to breathe in. Yeah? Now, we said, well, yeah, but you're narrowing the tube from 5 to 2. It's not really 5 to 2. I'm making up the numbers. From 5 to 2, so he's going to require more effort, more pressure gradient created between the pleural cavity and the outside atmosphere to draw air in. He says, fine. So instead of turning off the ventilator, just after the week, make it go down to 21% and provide enough pressure to overcome the inhibition of the tube. Yeah? That makes sense? So if you do that, then you don't have to pull out the tube. There's no problem of removing the tube, which is going to be a problem of assuming the whole thing is mutter. So that's weiter mutter, he says. And therefore, we came up with this technical way to do it. And in the second paragraph, he says it was approved by all the medical people. And it was when the medical... officially, this was done well professionally by responsible people and all the medical establishment approved it, the safety councils, etc., etc., etc. Okay, so that makes sense. They came up with this technical way to avoid the problem, which is clever. He says, that's really what I asked them, and then the shiloh wasn't necessary, because I think it's mutter anyway. He says, no, putting them on a timer, a ventilator with a timer, that's push it mutter. That wasn't the question we asked. The question was really about the tubes. Okay?
You're saying the timer's okay.
He says, push it, the timer's okay. I didn't even ask him about the timer. Don't accuse me. I don't know why. Here he's saying, I didn't even ask him about the timer.
Where's that?
It's on page 337. Sof Davar.
I disagree with him on
the timer? I'm saying according to... I'm not disagreeing.
Or you think that he's been a little misleading.
I think... No. So the question is like this. I don't know that what he quoted before where he was being misleading is relevant. He's saying, well, many, many posts can allow you to turn off a ventilator in certain circumstances. So what about this? You could say it's not relevant at all. Here I'm not doing a pula. Is this a kumvase or sheval taisa? They might have asked it because it's a kumvase. I think he is being misleading and quoting those poskim, but it might not even be relevant to the question. So I just pointed out that part of his analysis I don't know I think was wrong. We can discuss it maybe next time. It's already 1:00. But is that necessary for the question? Or you say no? Here I'm like Rav Neuvert, and I thought Rav Neuvert was addressing the point directly. Adding the oil to the candle is when it goes out. That's not a kumvase. Yes, in the chinami, adding oil to the candle will become vase, make it go out at a specific time, but I don't know that it's relevant to those posts. I don't think you need those posts to tell you it's okay to turn it off. I don't think you need that at all in order for this to be mutter. Dr. Abraham told me he asked Rav Yashiv about this, and he said, Zeretzach. Can't do that. Can't put it based on the timer. Bezeh aloshon, Zeretzach. So, okay, fine. But I mean, I don't think you need any of that. So that's why I disagree with him. I think you need a tshuv about this because it's not relevant to that. But okay. And then just on the last page, he says, no, it's not gram ritzicha. Doing this is not gram ritzicha. He added this page in at the end. He says, it would be gram ritzicha to take a patient from a regular ventilator and to put him on a ventilator with a timer. Because then, bekum va'asei, you're shortening his life. Because he was on the ventilator, which was giving him oxygen ad infinitum. And now you shortened it. But if he was never getting oxygen at all, and you put him on the ventilator with the restriction, then it's okay. So it depends on when you plug in the timer, he's saying, which sounds very technical. So at this point, maybe, this point you can argue with, I think. I think originally...
He kind of puts a hole in his argument.
I'm not sure. Meaning, if I only had an oxygen tank for a week, Rav Neubert's point is valid. If I only have an oxygen tank for a week, is giving the patient an oxygen tank for a week killing him or keeping him alive?
Keeping him alive. But then he's saying, but if you have...
But here, the difference is here, here I have a month of oxygen, I'm only giving him a week.
You're choosing to give him
so let's say I have four tanks, and I only give him one. I have four tanks.
But it's the same amount going in him at any given
time. No, no, I can give him a 1 gallon, a 2 gallon, a 3 gallon, or a 4 gallon. I only give him the 1 gallon.
But how long, that's just how long it'll last.
Same thing here.
But it's not, maybe the issue is it's not like a different, it's the same quality of oxygen the whole time he's getting.
Yeah, yeah, same quality, everything. So here I could put on the 1, 2, 3, or 4. Meaning, is there a chiv to make the timer 2.5 weeks as opposed to 2 weeks? I don't know. I think you could disagree with it. I think he's making a valid point, though.
The question isn't whether you're hired to do something. The question is it going off a problem?
Right.
And that's not connected to how long it is. He's just talking about the action of it going off. He's not saying there's a key to continue. The question is, when it goes off, have you done something wrong? I think that from the case of Yom Tov, it's clear that that's not what you're doing.
Right. I think so. And why then connecting, removing him from a regular ventilator to one of these is different? He thinks that pushes Gram Ratzicha. I think that's a harder case to make. I mean, you could argue Lakula with him. You could say he's being too frum. He's doing too machmir. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to deal with that. I'm not sure how to deal with that. Why is one... Because that's Bekum Va'aseh. He was on something. He says that's stopping a ventilator. Maybe he'll tell you that just stopping it. He's stopping it Lachar Zman. I mean, he was on the ventilator. You're not allowed to stop a ventilator. You're not allowed to stop a ventilator. Whether I push the button, it stops now. Whether I push the button, it stops in 5 minutes. Whether I push the button, it stops in a week and a half. That must be his argument, right? Whether it stops in a week and a half, it doesn't matter. So moving him from regular ventilator to one that's going to timer, it's going to, well, stopping it in 2 weeks, so it's aser. But why is stopping the ventilator aser? I mean, if you get down to it, it because it's a kum va'aseh, so here also, I plugged in the ventilator before I plugged it into the timer. That's not a kum va'aseh. I could have plugged it in without it. I don't know.
Right.
Okay, yesh lotun. Fine. So Ad Kan. So next time we will address Rav Moshe Feinstein. We can talk about this as the last piece if I think of anything, or if you think of anything on this last piece, on his last page of the Gram Ratzicha business, or if you can come up with a reason that Rav Neubert didn't really care about the tubes. Not sure why. And even though he didn't care about it, nonetheless they came up with this technical way around it, which is nice. So we'll talk about that for a moment. We'll move on to Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion. And then, on the last thing we'll talk about is, this was an article actually in the last RJJ journal, it was a letter to the editor about it in the previous one, about automatic defibrillators, ICD devices, and can you shut those off? Which is a fascinating discussion by an article by Rav Zilberstein, referencing Rav Eliashiv. So we'll talk about that. Okay, and then Mirza Shem will move on to dangerous therapies for a little bit.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.